Well, please do turn back to Romans chapter 13. On Fridays, I have, I guess I can use the word privilege, to help to run the Christian Union at Tolworth Girls' School. It's an experience. I can say that because the girls in question are upstairs in DOS now, so I can say whatever I want and they won't know. But something does seem like their minds do operate in a slightly different way, certainly to mine. On Friday, we were playing the word association game. You know the way it works. Someone says a word, the other person says a word that hopefully is in some way associated with the word that has just been said. And we played a few rounds of this on Friday. It was their choice. They wanted to play it. And no matter what the topic was, somehow it always came back to the Channel 4 programme Embarrassing Bodies. I don't know. I was saying words like robot. And no matter, it just kept on coming back to that. I tell you this, I'm not sure why, but you can ask the girls when they come down later as to how exactly that happened. But we're going to have a quick go, in a sense, of word association this evening, but there's no need to kind of shout out any answers. Because we read in Romans chapter 13 and verse 8, "Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another." And I wonder if we're going to be playing that word association game. If I was to say the word to you, the word debt, what would be the first thing that comes into your mind? Or what perhaps even, what kind of emotions or feelings does it evoke in you? When we immediately think of the word debt, we perhaps think about having to pay someone some money, perhaps a financial issue that we're faced with. Maybe we think about these very sort of payday loan adverts that we just see continually on the television, people getting caught up in these and getting further and further into debt. Perhaps it is a burden upon us. Maybe we think sometimes about being in debt to someone else, not necessarily in terms of money, but maybe someone has done something for us, and we kind of feel indebted to them. We feel that we owe them something. We should do something for them. Sometimes that can be a bit of an uncomfortable feeling. But hopefully what we'll see this evening is that when Paul speaks about this debt to love, it is not something, hopefully, which is a burden upon us. Not something which gives us an uncomfortable feeling, but that actually will become a joy to actually to love other people. And we'll see that as we go through. We're not looking at anything kind of a sort of deeply theological tonight, and nothing that many people here will not already know. But something that I think that we do need to be continually reminded of. We can often say that when it comes to the topic, I suppose, of love and loving others, it's sort of a, it's kind of it's almost like it doesn't need saying. We know that. But actually, the Bible has an awful lot to say about it. So clearly, God feels that actually we need to hear again and again the importance of the love that we are to have. And so our focus this evening is very much on verses 8, 9, and 10. And all we're going to do is just have three very, hopefully, simple, basic points from these three verses, but also hopefully points that will challenge us and help us to examine ourselves, our walk with God, and, of course, most importantly, how we treat other people in the context of these verses. So what does it say? First thing I want us to think about is this, is that love is very much a work in progress. It is something which is to be a continued work in progress. As we look in our Bibles, many of you here will be using the same translation as me, the New International Version. And the NIV has a way of splitting up chapters and obviously splitting up its subheadings and paragraphs. And sometimes that can be really useful and really helpful. And a new kind of a subheading or a new paragraph will be very much a new train of thought. But here I don't think it's particularly useful and particularly helpful. Because when we come to Romans 13 and verse 8, it is not the Apostle Paul starting a completely new kind of train of thought and train of thinking. It's actually the end of what he's just been thinking about. So Romans 13 and the first sort of few verses have all been speaking about submitting to the authorities. And that would have been a very interesting topic to be thinking about this evening with various elections coming up, but we're not going to do that right now. And as Paul kind of comes to the close of his argument on submitting to the authorities, he then speaks in verse 6 about paying taxes. That also would have been a very interesting thing to talk about, but we're not going to do that tonight either. But he starts to speak about you must pay what you owe. If you owe taxes, you should pay them. If you owe revenue, you should pay them. This is what he's saying, isn't it? Verses 6 and 7. And then in verse 8, let's try and let's kind of almost like if we dare with a pen or pencil kind of scrub out that little middle heading that the NIV gives to us. I know Brian Edwards has said in the past that you can do that, so it must be okay. So just scribble that out with a pen or pencil, or Tippex if you brought some. Why you'd have done that, I don't know. But get rid of it and then read straight on. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, revenue. Respect, respect. Honour, honour. Let no debt remain outstanding. Yeah, it follows directly on, doesn't it? There should be no break. Let no debt remain outstanding. That's what Paul is saying. Pay your debts, except for one very important one: the continuing debt to love one another. That phrase there, where it says in the beginning of verse 8, let no debt remain outstanding, it's actually one Greek word. And it has a kind of a sense of duty, of being sort of bound by an oath, of being obligated, of it being something that you must do, or what you should do. And so Paul is saying here, look, where there are debts, they must be paid. You are obligated to pay them. They are to be settled. Except, he says, the continuing debt to love one another. You see, the thing with debts is we really love it when they're paid off. Well, I guess we should do anyway. And those of you like me who've still got a mortgage to be paid off, you know, kind of counting down the years until eventually it's paid off and you kind of get your mortgage advice at the end of the year and think, really, is that all I've paid? I'm sure I've been paying this for ages and putting loads of money in. How come it's still that amount? And you long for that day when the debt is finally settled. It's done. The obligation that I have to pay that debt is over and finished. I no longer need to give any more money to the company providing me with my mortgage. But Paul says that is not how it is with love. The time will never come when you are no longer obligated or in debt to love other people. The time will never come when you can say, that is it, I've paid it, I've done it, my obligation is over, no more loving for me. Paul says, let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. I pinged Paul an email in the week trying to work out some of these, sort of the Greek translation of this word. His Greek is a lot better than mine. And the words there, in verse 8, continuing debt, aren't actually in the Greek. But when we look at the word love there, let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love, it is apparently in the present infinitive. Okay, now you also obviously know exactly what that is. What it basically means is it is something which is in progress, something which is continuing. It's not something which has been completed and has been done. It's not past tense. It's the present infinitive. It is something which is happening now and is to continue to happen. Paul, as he writes the Romans, says you need to, in a sense, keep on loving. There will never be a time when that has to stop. And again, we kind of think to ourselves, isn't that kind of really obvious? Isn't that kind of, you know, really kind of like straightforward? Why would we need to hear that? Well, Paul clearly felt that the church in Rome needed to be reminded of the fact that they had to keep on loving. And I think the reason for this is, as Paul goes on, we actually see in his mind who he's particularly thinking about when we're thinking about the object of the love here. Because specifically in these verses, Paul is not talking about our love directly for God. What he's actually speaking of, as we're going to see, is our love for other people. Love is a work in progress. It's something which is to be continually seen in our lives. And it is love which is for other people. We are to love one another. One of the defining marks of being a Christian is that we should be able to love the unlovable. And of course, love is not just a collection, or it certainly shouldn't be a collection, kind of like fuzzy feelings, warm feelings that we kind of have to people around. The thing about feelings is they come and they go. And actually, when we're trying to love someone maybe who's very difficult to love, and we actually have those feelings towards them, we can suddenly think, well, maybe I just can't do it. Maybe I can't love that person. But Paul's challenge for us in Romans 13 is that we must love others. We know we are to love God with all our hearts. But we are also, as Paul says when he goes into that second great commandment later on, to love other people. And there's a sense, isn't there, I guess, in one way in which almost loving God can be easier. Because God never lets us down. He loves us perfectly. He loves us more than we can ever imagine, more than we can ever love him. But But actually what can be really, really difficult is loving others. But Paul wants us to know that we must do this. Paul says, let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. For he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law. Now, when Paul speaks there of to love one another, we see again and again throughout the New Testament that that kind of phrase generally refers to love amongst believers. Jesus said in John chapter 13, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all men will know you are my disciples if you have love one for another. So there is, first of all, the disciples who are to love one another, and when they do that, it is a great witness and testimony to who? To all men, to the world out there, to the front line, as we've been thinking about earlier. When we love others, it makes a massive difference to how people see the church, how people see Christians. It is a powerful testimony to the world. Conversely, of course, then, when Christians do not love one another, and they are not in loving relationship with one another, it can badly damage the reputation of the church in the eyes of the world. And I guess one of our problems sometimes is that when we think about loving other people, and there are some people, obviously, that we find much easier to love than others. And even as I'm speaking now, you could probably think in your head of the people that are easy to love and those people that you know you come into contact with that are a lot harder to love and that you struggle with loving. But we can often just think, well, it's just about our personal relationship. It's just about me and that person. And of course, that is a really big thing. That's really important. That really matters. But there's actually something much bigger, something much wider at stake. If we do not love a fellow believer, yes, it damages our fellowship and relationship with that person, but it also damages the reputation of the church and the witness of the body of Christ. So in the context of the church family, Paul says, love one another. But he goes on to say as well, he who loves his fellow man. Now, it could be that Paul's just using a slightly different turn of phrase there as he writes, as people often do. But I believe that Paul is also kind of referencing here the fact that our love is not just meant to be within the confines of amongst believers and amongst Christians, but also to be out there on the front line as well. So again, the Greek word here for fellow man is the Greek word hetero. And you think to yourself, oh, that word sounds quite familiar. And it's often translated in the New Testament as another or other or as kind of somebody else. And it has that kind of sense of sometimes someone a little bit different. I believe that Paul is saying here that, okay, first of all, we need to have love within the family of believers, but also we are to love those who are different from us and those who are outside the fellowship and the family of believers. The church should be known for its love for people outside the family of God. And again, sadly, the perspective often of Christians from the front line, and maybe you faced it on the front line with various discussions and questions that maybe you've had, is that actually the opposite is often the case. So the world actually looks at the church and says, that is filled with people who hate. That is filled with people who are against certain people, certain things, certain issues. They hate people who have the wrong lifestyle, wrong sexuality, people who are different, people whose morals are different, don't live up to the church's standards. People's perspective on the church is that it is not a loving institution. And I wonder whether sometimes the issue is that when we're out there on the front line and maybe we're faced with something, to use, I guess, an example, I guess it's kind of still kind of sort of rumbling on, the gay marriage debate, and that's kind of, it's less of a debate now, it's obviously it's into law, but there's still various things sort of being discussed around that topic. And we're faced with that question, and we immediately feel we've got to make a stand. We've got to make it very, very clear exactly what we think about that particular topic. We don't want anyone to think for one moment that we agree that that's okay. And when we do that, we can sometimes come across, and the way we kind of present that can often be in a very unloving way. And we can sometimes be so concerned about making sure that people know the stand that we have on something that they actually miss out on the fact, or they mishear the fact that actually that we still love people, regardless of their lifestyle. We want to love people. Now, I'd rather my non-Christian friends would mistakenly come to the conclusion that I'm perfectly okay with gay marriage. The mistaken conclusion, don't mishear me, I'd rather they be kind of mistaken about that because of how I speak about people and how lovingly I speak about people and about grace than for them to come under the equally mistaken impression that I'm against people who are gay. Now, if they do have that first mistaken impression, I can very easily rectify that by speaking with them. But I'd much rather they kind of get it wrong because they see me as someone who is loving to all kinds of people and from all kinds of backgrounds and showing grace in those situations. It's a challenge for us how we relate to people on the front line. So often our kind of default setting can be condemnation. It shouldn't be. It wasn't Jesus' default setting. His was of love and was of grace. And of course we do need to be clear about what we believe about certain issues. Of course we do. But what is it that we want the world to see when they look at a Christian? Someone just with a tick list of what they do and don't like? Or that actually in Christianity there is love and grace and mercy and forgiveness? Christians should be known by their love, not just a strong stance against things they disagree with. And on the front line and in the church, we must be those who demonstrate love. It's not just something internalised. It's not just something that we can kind of think to ourselves, well, yes, I do. I love everybody. I love people in the church. I love people outside the church. When I pray about how much I love people. Love has to be demonstrated and shown and acted out. C.S. Lewis said this, that love is not affectionate feeling, but a steady wish for the loved person's ultimate good as far as it can be obtained. And it's not the only definition, obviously, one could give of love, but it's a very good one, isn't it? It's not just about affectionate feeling, but it's a steady wish. Again, this idea of it being this sort of continual thing for the loved person's ultimate good as far as it can be obtained. I wonder how people feel when they're around us. Do people feel that we love them? Do people know that we love them? Is it obvious that we are seeking their ultimate good as much as possible? People only feel that if we express that and if we take seriously the charge to actively love others. Think about your front line. Yeah, so tomorrow's bank holiday, so maybe you'll be relaxing at home, but you may be back home with family. You may go out with friends or Tuesday back at work. How do you speak to people on your front line? How do you treat them? Next time you're going to say something to someone, maybe ask that question, will this person know from what I'm about to do, from what I'm about to say, that I love them and I want their good? It's a good question to ask ourselves, isn't it? Before we respond, before we speak, before we do anything for anybody, just pause and just, in a few split seconds, will this do something for this person's ultimate good, as far as I can do it? And it applies just as much, obviously, from within the church as well as on the front line. Think about your different areas of service in the life of the church. Gareth mentioned that at our members' meeting the other week, the youth work, for example. So many volunteers in our youth work, probably our biggest area of ministry. Think about our youth work. Every youth worker, every children's worker will say, I love the kids. I love the young people. I love them. I want the best for them. Do they know that? They'll only know that when we treat them that way, when we speak to them in ways that they know that we love them. On our front line, are there those kind of people that sort of no one else kind of really loves, that no one else kind of really gets on with, that no one else kind of seems to value? But we should value them, and we should seek to do them good. In a world where people so often just look after their own interests, stab each other in the back, talk about other people behind their backs, as Christians we are to be different and to seek the good of others. Because in doing so, we reflect the character and the nature and the work of God. The Bible tells us very clearly that God loves us, but we're also told that God demonstrated his love for us in that whilst we were still sinners, Christ died for us. God has told us he loves us. We know from his word he loves us. But he has demonstrated that he loves us in the most amazing way possible in Jesus coming and dying for us. How do we demonstrate our love to the people who are around us? So ask yourself that question then this week. The people that you come in contact with, are they going to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that you love them and you want their good? That's a challenge for you for this coming week. It's a work in progress. We know that. We need to work hard at it sometimes with some people, but we must do it. Why? Let's have a look at our third point. Because love is a fulfillment of the law. When we love others, what are we doing? We are in obedience to God, and we are fulfilling the law of God. Now, it says we move down to verses 9, and also down to verse 10 as well. Paul making reference just to some of the Ten Commandments. And the Ten Commandments themselves, in fact, are really a summing up of the law that we see in the Old Testament. And the first four of the Ten Commandments relate to how people are to treat God and how God is to be worshipped. And in the second set of commandments, which composes obviously six, if your math is good, so the second six commandments are to do with our relationship with other people. Now, the Bible is very clear that we can never be justified by obeying and observing the law. It is only through faith in the Lord Jesus Christ, what he has done on the cross, that we can ever possibly come into relationship with God. But that doesn't mean that the law doesn't matter. It's not been abolished, Jesus said, but it has been fulfilled. Commandments still matter, and they are very easily summed up for us, and Jesus does it himself. Turn back a few pages to Mark chapter 12. Mark 12 and verses 28 to 31. Jesus being questioned about his teaching. So Mark 12, verse 28. So one of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked him, of all the commandments, which is the most important? 10 to choose from, apparently, but here we go. Here's what Jesus says. The most important one, answered Jesus, is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this. Love your neighbour as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. Pop back to Romans 13. The Ten Commandments are summed up with those two things, aren't they? So love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength. What are those first four commandments? Well, one of them, for example, let's just take one. Do not make for yourself an idol. If we are loving God in the way that we should be, the idea of even making an idol is not going to enter our heads. Or misusing the name of God. If we are loving God with all our heart, we would never even think of wanting to misuse his name. And the point that Paul is making here when he looks at some of these commandments from the second section in verse 9, do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not covet, whatever other commandment they may be, are summed up in this one rule, love your neighbour as yourself. You see, if we are serious about loving our neighbour, we're not going to be breaking any of those commandments. If we have this love for our neighbour, which seeks their ultimate good, then clearly we're not going to murder them. And that's fair to say. If you love your husband and your wife with that aim of doing their ultimate good, you're not going to commit adultery. If you love someone and want to do them good, you're not going to steal from them or lie to them or want what they have. Paul says that all of these commandments are just summed up by this, love your neighbour as yourself. It fulfills the law. If we want to live lives that are obedient to God, then we are to love our neighbour and seek to do them good. Verse 10, love does no harm to its neighbour. Therefore, love is a fulfilment of the law. You see, sometimes we can be very good at kind of, you know, keeping rules, or kind of we can sometimes feel quite confident about the fact, saying that we can keep the Ten Commandments as written down. No one hopefully is planning to go out this week and murder anybody or anything like that. I'm hoping not. Anyone's looking at, see if anyone's looking murderous at the moment, but thankfully not. And we can find it very easy to kind of keep a checklist sometimes of rules and regulations. And a lot of us can be like that. We actually like a little checklist of things we can kind of tick off and say, I've done this, I've done this, I've not done that, I've not done that. And in one sense, that can be quite an easy thing to do. If we kind of examine ourselves at the end of a day and we look back at the day and think, well, how was my spiritual walk today? How was my walk with God today? And we can go, I didn't lie to anyone today. I didn't do this, I didn't do that. And we can kind of like sometimes feel quite pleased with ourselves and think, well, I've not done too badly. There have been a few wobbles here and there, but overall I think I've done quite well. 6 out of 10, maybe a 7, pushing it. But I've done quite well. But what if we examine ourselves in this way? And we look back over a day, and rather than focusing on, in a sense, individual things, we look back and we ask ourselves the question, in terms of every single person that I had some kind of meaningful contact with this week, did I love them and seek to do their ultimate good? Now, that's a completely different question, isn't it? That's a kind of a mind-blowing question. And when we kind of start to ask ourselves that question, then we suddenly start to realise that maybe our little checklist of, well, I don't think I lied today, and I'm pretty sure I didn't swear today, or part of it, I did stub my toe, maybe that wasn't a really bad word, that was okay. And that little checklist suddenly kind of pales into insignificance when we consider actually what God wants us to do is to love our neighbour as ourselves. Because when we do that, we're summing up, we're fulfilling all of those commandments. That is what we are to do. So as we finish then, here's the question. How is your love life? Never thought I'd ever ask that question from the front of a church. But how is your love life? How is it? How was it last week? How is it going to be this week? Looking at Romans 13, do you see what the apostle is saying? No debt should remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. We are to continue in love. You can never love too much. We are to love one another, both within the family of believers, even those really difficult people, and also those without even the really difficult people as well. No exceptions. And do you realise that in doing that, you are obeying God's perfect will, his perfect law, because loving your neighbour fulfills that law. My challenge to you is to commit yourself this week to whoever you meet. And so some of us will meet more people than others. And you may meet a range of people this week. Friends, family, people you've never met before. People you never even expected you'd bump into. And there they are. And you have some kind of contact with them. Ask yourself that question. What can I do that will demonstrate unconditional love to that person and seek to do their ultimate good? And then at the end of the week, sort of look back and just see what the difference has been. Just think about maybe the difference that you've even made in someone's life by committing yourself to love one another. Let's bow our heads and pray together.